On radio. On radio. More of the good stuff. CliffCentral.com. Stay informed and up to date. It's the Daily Maverick Show. Tuesdays, 1 to 2 p.m. on CliffCentral.com.
It's 1.06 p.m. and you're tuned into the Daily Maverick Show on Cliff Central. I'll be joined in studio by Daily Maverick reporter Greg Nicholson. Welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
I hope you were listening to the last show about the Dacha couple.
I certainly was.
I know you were in Maseru last week. Did you come back with any Durban poison?
No, we didn't come back with anything. But the industry there is quite big, we've heard. And we did see quite a few people partaking.
Okay, I know you can't say it on air, but Greg's winking at me. So I think you know, we'll take this off air. But Greg, today we're actually going to be talking about small business in South Africa. Legal small business in South Africa. Now, it's been a big focus in the President's State of the Nation, in the Premier's SOPA address in Gauteng. And I mean, I think one question is just why is there so much focus on small business? Why should we care?
I think there are two things. Yeah. First, let me start with the issue of job creation and employment in South Africa. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows the economy in South Africa needs a boost to alleviate the triple threats of poverty, unemployment, and inequality. And the small business sector has been identified as one of the key opportunities in creating jobs and building the economy. And it's also underperforming. So that's a sector that's universally recognized that we need to target.
Okay, so it's really about the potential for it to contribute to economy.
That's right. And to really sort of alleviate some of the problems that South Africa's facing right now. But then, so that's been around for a long time. Yeah. This year, it's really coming to focus, not only because the ANC government needs to start showing a lot more action in developing the economy, but because of the xenophobic tax on stores in Soweto and other townships around Gauteng. What we saw there is the state really classified it as criminal activity, motivated by, I think, anger over the success of foreign-owned business stores, particularly spas and supermarkets. Yeah. And then what it sort of really brought about, and President Zuma mentioned this, I think, in his State of the Nation address replies, is that South African businesses and township businesses are particularly suffering from under certain conditions, particularly that are legacies of apartheid.
Yeah.
During the apartheid period and even earlier through the colonial period, but there's much more focus on the apartheid period, there's a problem where economic competition was stifled within townships, where it was most businesses, you run particularly a bottle shop or maybe a spaza, but yeah, then there was little competition to really help businesses grow. And so South Africans in the democratic era have been said to lack those sort of that history and culture of starting businesses and entrepreneurial activity and being used to competing with the best in their industry. And what we've seen is these foreigners come in, and really they do have a culture. They come from areas with a strong culture of entrepreneurial activity, where they through communal and family networks, they're able to build industries in different countries, like we've seen and around the world, and dominate these industries. And so it's really sort of throwing the light on the question, how do we make South African business successful, and then how do we help that alleviate some of South Africa's toughest problems?
Okay, so we're seeing... a year ago, we had a new ministry created, the Ministry of Small Business Development, with Lindiwe Zulu at the helm. I know it's only been about a year. Has there been any developments? Have they had time to actually do anything?
It's difficult to say. There definitely has been some development. But if you don't mind, first I'd like to go through some stats on the state of small business in South Africa.
Please, give us some context.
And this comes from the Minister Zulu herself.
Yes.
Last year she was addressing a conference, and she just sort of said that the failure rates among small SMMEs is really, really hurting local businesses and industry. Mm. For example, 37% of SMMEs, 37% of small businesses have a chance of surviving 4 years, 10% have a chance of surviving 10 years, and 70 to 80% do not survive their first year, which I think is quite shocking. Currently, small business contributes 35% to our GDP, and that really needs to be raised to 60 to 80% is the government's target. But if you don't mind, if you can stick with me on the stats.
Please.
But there's other studies that have shown that less than 14% of South Africans plan to start a business in the next 3 years, and that's 13% below the global average. And then in 2012, if you look at the entire activity in the small business sector, it took a 20% drop. So what we're really seeing is the industry, which can really, really help South Africa address some of its key challenges, is one of the industries that's really suffering right now.
I mean, the one that really stuck out for me, that 80% of small businesses are not surviving there.
That's
the first
true.
Year.
That's I mean, true. And what they really need is support. The government needs to focus much more on giving these businesses support. And we need to ask the question is why aren't they surviving? That has been one of Minister Zulu's first aim is to really just understand the situation. And she and a lot of other provincial departments have been traveling around the country looking at some of these issues and just trying to understand exactly what's wrong and what can we do.
I mean, looking at the ease of doing business index that's run globally, and some of the sort of micro things that are coming up in this is things like getting credit is being listed as difficulty, getting electricity, registering a business. I know you've been reporting from some of the townships during the xenophobic violence. Is the anecdotal evidence, is it similar to this? Are these the kinds of challenges that businesses are running on?
Yeah, most definitely, I think, particularly the aspect of getting credit.
Yeah. Actually, Greg, I'll just stop you there for a second. We have just about to come on air. Incubation manager at Awetu Project, Gareth Taylor. Awetu does some great work in recruiting or identifying, incubating, and then investing in small business. Gareth, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Fantastic. Now, we've just been running through the stats about small businesses in the country, and they're quite worrying. One statistic is telling us that 80% of small businesses are shutting down within their first year. Are you seeing this on the ground? What's your experience in trying to get small businesses off the ground?
Yeah, I think there are a lot of complications with small businesses. I mean, as you mentioned with the stats, there's a number of guys that their businesses are shutting down 80% in the first year, and a couple later on. I think it goes up to like 90% after 3 years. So there are definitely a lot of complications, and guys are definitely struggling. But that isn't to say it's impossible. You know, it's not to say that it's difficult. It's rather, if you know how to do it and you're prepared to take a plunge and you have someone there to help you, it obviously makes it a lot better and a lot easier.
Absolutely. Before we get into how to overcome, I'd be interested, what are some of the challenges that your entrepreneurs are stating as the reasons why they might close up shop?
So with all small businesses, the number one issue is obviously cash flow. Cash flow is the lifeblood of your business. And many entrepreneurs, they don't have the financial management and the cash management experience to be able to know how to manage their finances, and often then will run into cash flow issues and the business will then close down. So that's, generally speaking, that's the biggest one. The one that we often hear about is funding, where when people come to us, they're like, oh, yeah, we really want funding. We really want to try and get funding for our businesses.
Okay.
But the issue in SA is not that there isn't funding. The issue here is that it's access to funding.
Okay.
Individuals don't necessarily have the ability to be able to access that funding because they don't know how to put together their business plan properly. They don't know how to speak the language. They don't know how, as I mentioned, to do the whole financial management. And they don't have a track record. So that all prevents them from being able to have access to funding. So those are two of the bigger ones. And then obviously the ones that people would speak about and is often in the news are the labor-related issues and the red tape and the compliance.
Okay, so I'm interested in this idea of the lack of access to credit. And so what I'm hearing from you is that there is a lot of credit available for small businesses, but there's a missing link there between the small businesses and the big credit providers. So how are you filling that gap? How are you getting the small businesses access to this funding and credit?
So there's a couple of different ways that we do it.
Yeah.
We have two main divisions in our company. One is the incubator, where we have a micro business incubator, and the other side is our investment fund, where we speak more about small businesses.
Mm-hmm.
So I'll touch on the incubator first. There, we work with individuals who are really passionate about entrepreneurship and want to start a business. But many people come in and they want to start a business that requires 100,000 Rand or 1 million Rand or 5 million Rand,
yeah,
but they don't yet have that track record. So we say to them, you know, the principles that you learn and the skills that you learn when running a micro business are exactly the same to a large degree as the skills and experience that you need to run a small or medium business. So come and work with us. Come through a six-month incubation program with us where you'll start up a micro business in the program. You'll have that support. You'll have the business training and business coaching. And by the end of that, all that experience and all the knowledge that you've learned from starting up a micro business can then be transferred into any other business that you then start after that. And then you have that track record.
Okay.
You know how to set up a business plan. You're able to access funding.
Okay, so one of the key way there is just getting them that when they are then going through the funding and for the credit, they can say, I've run a small business of this much revenue over this much time. And you think that boosts their chances of successfully accessing the funding?
Yeah. So by them having that type of track record, knowing how to speak the language, knowing how to manage their finances, they're in a better position to be able to access that kind of funding. Where beforehand, they can't speak the language. They don't know what it is they're applying for. They don't know how to put a business plan together. Often they pay people to put the business plan together for them.
Yeah.
But then when they're quizzed on it, then they don't know how to answer any of the questions, and they see straight through that and like, well, hang on, you know, this actually isn't your plan.
Okay.
Gareth, this is Greg here. I was just wondering, on these issues, why is it that so many people don't know the basics of these business issues? Is it problems with our education program not teaching basic business strategies and management? Or do we have some sort of problem in South Africa where we just have a lack of understanding of entrepreneurial activity?
Greg, how's it? I think there are a number of different issues here. One is there's a lack of, well, we know that South Africa has one of the lowest total entrepreneurial activity rates in the world. We really don't rank very well when compared to other sub-Saharan African countries or to other developing countries. And there are a number of reasons for this. As you mentioned, the education. I think a large part of it is our education and the apartheid education that was received under apartheid for the majority of South Africans. There's also a lack of role models. Where in the communities, there aren't enough people who have started successful businesses. Or the entrepreneurs that they see are the survivalist entrepreneurs that you'll see on the corner who aren't necessarily doing that well. And as a result, there's this impression that entrepreneurship is the last option rather than one of the first options, something that you can really go into for financial freedom, that you can see a business as an asset rather than you going into this because there aren't any options at the end of the day. So I think there are a number of issues. I'm not sure if I addressed the question completely, though, Greg.
No, that's fine. And can you tell us about the success rate Awetu has in dealing with some of these entrepreneurs?
So in the incubator that we have now, which we've just revamped, we have, out of the 30 entrepreneurs that we started with in October last year, we now have 25 new jobs that we've created. And those businesses are generating, at the end of December, they were generating 1.8 million additional revenue than had been going and being generated in the economy. So really strong results there. In our investment fund, we started 25 businesses in March last year. And the way that we go about starting our businesses is that we put in a small amount of funding at the start to see whether a prototype is successful and whether we can find a product market fit. And very cheaply and very quickly, then we're able to tell whether this business is going to be successful or not. So very quickly, we were able to tell that three of those business ideas weren't that viable. And the other 22 businesses then have been running and are successful and are still going today.
And Gareth, we were talking a little bit earlier about the introduction of the Small Business Development Ministry. What's your take on government's approach to small business and the introduction of the new ministry?
So I think government definitely does see that small business is definitely the way to go forward. One of our big things and one of our mantras are that the WICS project is trying to solve the problem of the missing middle. Mm-hmm. You know, where there is a problem of a missing small and medium enterprise sector here in South Africa, which would normally contribute to between 50 and 60% of the GDP and 50% of employment. And government is doing a lot to try and solve this problem and to try and make sure that we are encouraging new business growth and that small businesses are coming up. I think one of the big issues are the compliance side and the labor-related side, where you see in countries where there's more entrepreneurial activity is that there isn't as much legislation in place that makes it difficult for these businesses to come up. So I think we have to try and address this issue, but obviously there are other complications that make it quite difficult for us to address as well.
And what sort of legislation might help small and medium-sized businesses? Would it be just a cutting of red tape, or do you think the sort of labor laws are perhaps too stringent or too strong and cumbersome on young entrepreneurs, on new entrepreneurs?
So, I mean, from the compliance side, the government has done a lot of nice work on the tax side, where there's micro businesses, which really helps to simplify it for small and micro businesses. But I think definitely on the labor related side, you know, with the issues with the unions, they're people. As soon as there's a wage negotiation or there's a minimum wage that is struck in one specific industry, it filters down right the way through to small and micro businesses. Mm. And when you're starting up a business and it's that size, you just can't afford to pay those kinds of salaries necessarily. So I do definitely think that there needs to be some sort of strata where there is, you know, if you're in a micro business, if you're in a medium business, or if you're in a large corporate business, where there are these stringent rules which are in place, because obviously we want to make sure that our labor force is not being taken advantage of. But the problem is that now there are a whole lot of businesses and there are a whole lot of enterprises that could be started up, but because labor is too expensive, they're not able to do so. And that's the issue. So I do definitely think that having this kind of strata approach where micro or small businesses could potentially fall into a different sector from a wage perspective, I don't necessarily think it would cannibalize, but rather think there would be a whole lot more businesses that would be started up.
Mm.
And people who are currently unemployed would be prepared to then take that lower wage to be able to get in and to be able to have that income that they would otherwise not be able to get access to.
Mm-hmm. And Gareth, so for just some advice, I guess, for new entrepreneurs out there, is it absolutely necessary to go through an incubator? Can you survive outside of an incubator, or is it? Would you advise? And obviously, you work for Awetu, but would you definitely advise going to an incubator? What are the pros and cons of incubation programs?
So, I mean, obviously, I'm going to be biased here. Entrepreneurship is
okay,
not...
Maybe then you should just tell us the cons.
Yeah.
Can you think of any?
That makes
I was saying maybe you could just tell us the cons, the negatives.
So I'll get to some of the cons. But entrepreneurship is not something that can be taught. It's something that has to be learned. It's like riding a bike. You know, you're not going to learn how to ride a bike by looking at a flip chart or doing some reading. And many of us were fortunate enough that do ride bicycles or have ridden bicycles to have someone there alongside us to help us, to encourage us, to motivate us when we fall down, to show us how we need to steer and pedal and do all of those things at the same time. But the thing is that it's not that person that's pedaling for you. You know, at the end of the day, you're the one that has to do it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you definitely can go out and do it there yourself, and many individuals have gone out and done it themselves. So, no, it's definitely possible. Con side, obviously, some of the incubators, sometimes you'd have to yield up some equity.
Mm-hmm.
Many entrepreneurs are not happy about that. But, you know, at the end of the day, do you want to be king or do you want to be wealthy? You know, you can be king of your little pie that's going to be worth 100 rand, or you can be wealthy and own 10% of something that ends up being worth 1 million rand. So that's also something that needs to be weighed up there. Some of the other cons, struggling to think of any at the moment.
I mean, that's great. I mean, that's more than enough, Gareth. My final question, just based on your success with Awetu, if I'm not mistaken, you're only in Gauteng at the moment. Do you think the model you've got going now is something we can roll out across the country?
Absolutely. I think this is definitely something that we could be rolling out across the country.
Yeah.
You know, I think it's a practical solution to this entrepreneurial issue where, you know, individuals don't necessarily, when people are matriculating, they're not necessarily able to enter the job market. They're not necessarily going to be getting into university. Entrepreneurship is a viable alternative for those individuals as long as they have someone who's along with them to walk the road with them,
mm-hmm.
and to be able to help them and guide them and assist them in doing so. And now we're able to turn people who otherwise would have not been able to provide for themselves now, not only provide for themselves, but potentially become job creators and employers as well.
Fantastic.
I definitely do think
fantastic. Thanks a lot, Gareth. That's all we have time for, but keep up the great work you're doing over there, Awetu.
Awesome. Thank you, Kingsley. Thank you, Greg.
And Gareth, just finally, for our listeners out there, I was wondering, can you suggest a way how to get in touch with Awetu?
So, for anyone who's interested in joining the incubator, they can send... send the word yes to 45345, or else they can have a look at our website. That's awetuproject.co.za, and they'll be able to find out a whole lot of information on there and our contact details, etc.
Fantastic. Thanks a lot, Gareth.
Awesome. Thank you, guys.
Fantastic. Now, Greg, we're hearing a lot about Awetu's approach. The word incubation came up a lot. I mean, that sounded familiar in that... in the State of the Province address by the Premier, there was a mention of incubation being a big way they were going to revitalize the township economy. The city of Joburg has set aside billions. Some more has been set aside in Tshwane. And it sounds like based on what their way to project is saying that incubation is a key part or a quite helpful way to boost business.
No, I think so. I think like Gareth was saying that often I think in our society we're still lacking certain entrepreneurial skills and a culture of competitive entrepreneurship. And I think it's really important that the government has now recognized that we really need to upskill aspiring entrepreneurs and existing in small and medium-sized businesses. I think you've got the figures there, but they're investing quite a lot of money in upskilling these young entrepreneurs, and I think that can only be a positive thing. We just have to, one of the things we have to make sure and note is that these incubation programs that the government is either launching or supporting are efficient and successful, and we're not wasting money on what looks like a good idea, but in fact isn't effective.
I mean, yeah, I mean, you mentioned I do have the stats. I mean, one key name that's popped up here is the NYDA, and they've set up a 2.7 billion rand fund for young people. Now, I mean, I don't want to be too cynical, but we know some of the issues we've had with the NYDA in the past. So I think it's that issue we have between intent and execution. Right, so I mean, the stats look promising on paper, but you know, can we count on this money actually getting to the young people? Can we count on it being executed efficiently?
The government, both at national and provincial, and even some at municipal level as well, have set up key partnerships where they're trying to deal with incubation programs and different upskilling programs. And frankly, it's too important to fail and waste money.
Absolutely. Sorry, Greg. I'll just make you hold for a second. We've got on the line Tutuko Shezi. Rather than listen to Miss Greg and I talking, we've got an actual entrepreneur on the phone. Shezi, you set up quite a lot of businesses and have been quite successful, so we really want to get your perspective. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Kingsley. How are you?
Good, guys? Good. I was worried you wouldn't be able to make time. You'll be too busy out there making money.
Anyway, talking to you, man.
Perfect. Thanks for making time, Shezi. So, Shezi, we're just talking about the state of small business in SA, and we're going through some of the challenges entrepreneurs face and some of the things that government and other incubators can do to help them out. So, I'm curious about your experience. I mean, what challenges have you faced in the setting up of multiple businesses that you've done?
I've done quite a few businesses since varsity days.
Yeah.
You know, from varsity days, I did. Video gaming machines, you know, those arcade games where you put one rand address. Then in Joburg, I've done gardening service. And then the most successful business that I've started was Crash Mobile. It's still running today. It really pays the bills to this day, which is also a mobile scratch repair business.
Absolutely. And what are some of the common challenges that have popped up as you set up some of these businesses? What are common challenges that you face? May it be credit, may it be labor relations issues. What are some things that pop up and get in your way?
I think the biggest thing that every business needs, you know, before that, there's always a trouble for everyone, is not really finance, you know. It's finding customers. I think that's the biggest. That's the biggest thing that people need to get. Because if you cannot reach the customer, you know, even if you do have the funding, that funding will go down the drain if you cannot reach the customer.
Yeah, absolutely.
So now reaching the customer takes there's a few things. Either if you've got a direct line to the customer. You need marketing, and marketing in South Africa is very expensive. You know, to put an advert together, get it paid on radio or TV, can cost thousands. You know, and for small businesses, that can be really prohibitive. So that's really the main challenge that small business people face.
And Shezi, you're speaking to Greg here. I was just wondering, when you're looking at your business ideas, it seems to me that you've gone into certain, perhaps maybe you'd say unglamorous industries where you find a lot of young people out there these days who simply want to set up a fashion label or their own music label or, you know, one of these things that's associated with quite, you know,
with
quite,
labels.
With labels.
I know. And so
how do you identify a business there where there will be a customer base and avoid going into what you think would be cool or what you're interested in?
I think for me, what I have found, like for example, I'll take my example.
Yeah.
I'm a qualified electromechanical engineer from UCT, and I've got the graduation photograph to prove it.
Okay. I hope so.
These days you need to have the evidence. You know?
Oh yeah. Oh, yeah.
We don't know if a photograph proves it. We might have to call the institution on the line. You know, just, you never know these days.
I worked in consulting and management consulting with Accenture, a reputable company. You know, getting paid lots of money. You know, in my days, I was able to afford lots of things, but I decided to go into panel beating. You know, which is not looked at as very sexy. Mm. You know, it is looked at as a dirty business. You know, where people of certain stature shouldn't be seen
and I'd imagine all your family and friends are wondering what you're doing, going from this highly paid or what I'd imagine is a good corporate job into panel beating. They must have been shocked.
True. They were concerned, really. They were concerned from my career counselors, from some of my friends. They wouldn't, obviously, some of them wouldn't really voice it, but those industries like plumbing, you know, plumbing and panel beating, all these artisanal industries.
Yeah.
You know, like I had a plumber in my house at a day, did a 4-hour job trying to find a leak. He sent me a bill for 3,000 rand, you know, just for a lousy 2-3 hour job. You know, because I can't do it myself. But here's this guy, got a few machines, puts this thing there, leaves an invoice, you know, and for South Africans, even the education, I still think that really for South Africans to really take over the economy, that's what we need to do. You know, take over those artisanal invoice rights.
Okay, Shazi, I want to talk a bit about incubation. I know you did some work with Endeavor. I'm not sure if that was full incubation, but I'd like to hear from you if you think the incubation process or option is something that's helpful for small business. Do you think it's best to do it alone? What do you think of that?
I think the incubation stuff is key.
Okay.
I think it is key, but I think also more key is finding someone who can be able to understudy or learn from. You know, because people may make a lot of mistakes that have been made before unnecessarily. And then if you want to go into panel beating, find someone who's doing panel beating, spend two, 3 months working for them free of charge. I think that's more worth than any incubation can ever do. Because that proper incubation is really looking at someone do it and learning from them and learning how you can do it better. I think there is no better incubation than that.
Okay.
And
which is what is lacking in our incubation space in South Africa at the moment.
Okay.
And Shazi, can you tell us about some of those key lessons you learned from that where others have failed before that you learned early on in business which have helped you? And also, can you just give us a bit of a sense of the size of the businesses that you're doing now? Do you have employees and so on?
Yeah, I've got about 28 employees.
Mm-hmm. 38?
At the moment, 28.
28, wow, that's still a lot. Yeah,
on the panel between business.
Mm-hmm.
And then we're making not a lot, it's a couple of million rand a year.
Mm-hmm.
Not so bad. A
couple of million than the rest of us. A couple of million more.
But I think people need to be patient. You know, I've always been impatient with myself at times. You know, and my mentor was saying, because at the moment, you know, you need to build. You know, only when you're 40s are you supposed to, in your 40s are you supposed to enjoy the fruits of your labor. For now, I slave away. I don't make a lot. You know, I just make enough to live and live an okay lifestyle. But I think I'm content that what I'm doing at the moment is just building. You know, at some point, then I'll be I'll be harvesting.
Okay. I hear you. Now, Shazi, I came across something online that you wrote a few years ago. I hope you won't kill me for bringing this up. But you wrote in an article that you wrote for, I think, for Kasi Economics, and you said, I would like the Honorable Minister to get a new advisor on small business policy. The minimum qualification should be someone who has run a spaza shop for at least 1 month and made a profit. I think it's clear that you think there's a big disconnect between the people designing policy and rolling policy out and the people on the ground and what they actually need. Could you say some more about that?
I agree fully with that, because I think the policy guys must, even the Minister of Trade and Industry, must just take 1 week or 1 month, you know, leave the office in Pretoria, come and work with an entrepreneur, and go to and see them battling to pay salaries, you know, at month end. See them kind of find that extra 100 rand just to pay the one last employee. So then they can really be able to draft policies that can be really attuned to what we're doing on the ground.
I mean,
it's tough as an entrepreneur on the ground in South Africa. You know, sometimes people say it's even easier in Ghana and all the other places. You know, sometimes, you know, one is to really maybe succeed in Ghana first and then come back in South Africa having succeeded. You know, but this is our country. You know, we have every right to succeed in this country.
Okay, absolutely. Now, I just want to quickly talk about another initiative you started, Project Excellence, I think formerly known as Buy Black. Could you tell us a bit about that and how you think it can tie into boosting small black business?
I think what we're trying to do with Buy Black really is to say how do we harness the power of black consumers,
and
even consumers of other races, to make a conscious decision and say, for me to make a lasting contribution to the economic transformation of South Africa, I need to buy from black-owned businesses and make sure that wherever they have a chance of buying their loaf of bread from a black guy instead of the guy who's already established, who doesn't need the extra 1 rand, that is the channel that spending. Much as we are trying to get corporates to do it, you know, we are putting laws to make corporates do it.
Absolutely.
But most importantly, that personal decision where there is no law that says you need to do it, where you consciously do it without any expectation of a return, to say, let me go and support this filling station, which is black-owned in my area, because the guy is paying off a loan from the IDC, if he ever got one, you know, because maybe the other guy got a soft loan from his uncle, you know, free of charge, whereas other guy is fighting a mountain of debt and having to still succeed, you know. So that's the challenge that we're trying to solve, and we're trying to create a community of people who think in the same way, you know, black or white, who think in exactly the same way, to say, let me make economic transformation start with me. Let me start with my wallet. And when I'm going out to eat, decide, where do I want to go eat? Do I go to an established place where they don't need my money anyway, or do I go where I'm needed?
Yeah.
And I think that's the question that we try to make people to be conscientized about.
And Shazi, from what I understand of the Buy Black project, the aim was to link consumers looking for a particularly good, let's say, restaurants in the Maboneng district with black-owned businesses. Can you just tell us a little bit about that process, what you learnt about the state of black-owned business? Because from some of my friends who participated, it sounded like it was quite shocking that, you know, you might want to go to a black-owned supermarket in, you know, the Sandton area or something, and then you realise how few black-owned supermarkets there actually are.
There are not any. Then in Sandton, you won't find any black-owned supermarket. In the whole of Sandton, the closest you're going to find a black-owned supermarket is next to Tembisa, a place called Ivory Park.
Okay,
it's a shocking state. You know, that we did proper research where we tried to identify the various companies from the various chains, which chains have got which black employees, and that's information that you easily can find from the employees. You know, you walk into a place and you ask, the employees will always know who their boss is. You know, mm-hmm. They can never not know. So it's one of those shocking states.
And did you find that across the industry, that there is a real lack of black-owned businesses in a whole range of sectors?
Yes, absolutely. What is most distressing is that in South Africa, unlike other places, unlike Malawi, just like the president made the reference. I'm just using the president what he said. Unlike Malawi, we have resources. We've got spending money, you know. And if we can channel that spending, we can be able to really transform the country. If we can turn our spending correctly, we can fix everything behind the scenes. Even manufacturing, we can fix. Even agriculture, we can fix. Yeah. You know, such that we can make sure that the tomatoes I eat at home, I make sure they're owned by a black farmer. You know, if one can have that comfort in South Africa, then we will be truly free. You know, until then, this freedom thing will always be elusive.
Oh, I hear you, Shezi. That's all we have time for. I mean, thank you so much. You've got some great insights as a businessman and as someone really trying to improve the state of black business in South Africa. Thanks for making time, Shezi.
Thank you, guys. Thank you for having me.
Fantastic. Now we're just going to go into the break. I think we have some squatter camp lined up. Alright, Squatter Camp there with Umoya. We're playing in memory of the late rapper Flabba, who passed away this past week. Just to get back into the show, we've been talking about the state of small businesses in South Africa and small black business in South Africa. So Greg, we've talked to experts in the field, their Way to Project, and they're doing some great work there. We've talked to Ntutuko Shezi, serial entrepreneur, black business owner. And I mean, how do we feel now after talking about all this, about some of the government projects being rolled out? Do we think it's an okay start? 1 year into the Small Business Development Ministry, are we confident? How are we feeling?
I think particularly from talking to the guys at Awetu and the Incubation Project, one of the things there is that you realize, although we often malign the government and the ANC for failing to take significant action for small and medium businesses, sized businesses, there is work going on. And the figures that we mentioned before are in the billions. There's billions of rands being invested in trying to promote small business and both give them financing and the skills to do the work that they need. The question is whether it's going to work. And I think at this early stage, with only the Small Business Ministry being around for just under a year, what we've seen is an acknowledgement that small business is important to the government and the state and the ANC has recognized its importance to South Africa's future. But obviously we need to go beyond that. And currently we're in a bit of a phase where the small business minister and certain state officials are still consulting around the country and provincial officials too, still consulting around the country on what entrepreneurs and new entrepreneurs say are the problems and what needs to be done and then what feasibly needs to be done. And that raises a few other questions that might be difficult to answer in the long term with the ANC's sometimes competing interests within the alliance with COSATU and the SACP. So I think for perhaps a counter narrative on some of these things that are going on, you can just look at the DA's proposals on small business ownership. And while they do sort of appreciate the what seems to be the seriousness that the state is taking small business entrepreneurs, they have a few other recommendations, including establishing one-stop shops for small business development in every municipality across the country, combining CEDA, CEFA, SARS, and the CIPC. They also want, and this is what I think everybody seems to always talk about, whether it's, we still need to have a lot more details on this, but cutting off of red tape and unnecessary regulations, which there's a lot of stories about just how hard it is to register a business and how hard it is to go through all of the hoops that you need to just to get your business off the ground. But, and Minister Zulu has said she is concerned about, after she was appointed, she said she was concerned about the reports of unnecessary and overburdensome regulation. But I think we're yet to see any real development on that front and specifics as to what could change. The DA also recommends the partnering with the Department of Basic and Higher Education to push for entrepreneurship as a subject of schools, FET, colleges and universities. And perhaps that could go back to what Gareth was talking about, just in terms of really embedding the skills and culture of entrepreneurship in South Africa so that we can... More new businesses can hit the ground running and less of them can fail in their first few years.
And absolutely. I mean, I can definitely relate to what you mentioned about the red tape. I mean, firstly, the stats are telling us from the Doing Business Index that South Africa dropped over the past year. It's now number 61 in the world in terms of the ease of starting a business. And I personally have had the experience of registering a new business, and it's even with access to the internet and you know, access to technology and best practice and so on, it was not very easy for me.
That was that clothing label / record company,
let's,
right?
Let's not talk about it, okay? The African bad boy, Sean John, did take off quite right. But anyway, point is, I mean, not that it counts for too much, but I've experienced it, and I can imagine what it would have been like without access to the internet, without access to people in my network that I know have done it before. So, I mean...
Well, that's another recommendation from the Democratic Alliance as well, establishing an army of small business mentors made available to small business incubators and make them free of charge, which I think is a positive thing.
Yeah, I'm not sure about the word army, but that's something Shezi brought up.
Can give them uniforms and everything.
For him, it was less about incubation in a formal sense,
about mentorship.
But it's more about mentorship. And if I can see somebody else do it and do it under their wing, mm-hmm. I mean, that's something that he mentioned as being quite important.
And I think all of these are rather, you know, reasonably uncontroversial recommendations.
Yeah.
It's about having the will from the states to implement them and really push them forward with the support and particularly the financial backing that it needs. We need the budget for all of these things to run as well. The issue that I think a lot of small business owners and that a lot of critics complain about that is more controversial is reviewing the Labour Relations Act to simplify labour regulations for small businesses, you know, to make it easier to hire and fire workers, essentially. Because a lot of small businesses now say that they're you know, under the gun from unions and overburdensome labor relations regulations, and that means that they can't, that they're not flexible enough to run their business and manage their staff as they wish.
I mean, it's interesting that you bring up organized labor, because I mean, COSATU is something that's been in the press for the past few days. I mean, to be honest, it's been hard for me to make heads or tails of what's going on. I feel like it's been in the news.
That was a smooth segue.
Oh, that's me, man. I think it's like it's been in the news for a while, and between the issues with NUMSA and the issue with Zwelinzima Vambi, it's really hard to know what is the state of COSATU. Is COSATU one unified body that we can bring into conversations like this? Are they too busy in fighting? I mean, Greg, what's going on? If you could just give us a quick summary of what is the state of what's going on at COSATU right now.
I think they are too busy in fighting, and it's interesting. I've been to a lot of COSATU press conferences over the last couple of years, and I can hardly remember when they actually addressed in detail significant labor relations issues. There are many issues going on with workers right now in South Africa, and there's a reason why we have quite stringent labor laws that were won through the hard work of COSATU and other movements.
Absolutely.
fighting against apartheid, and workers across the country often receive very low pay. They're often exploited by their bosses. They face issues of racism at work, and despite our, you know, our quite progressive laws, there's still a lot of problems at the workplace level. And while individual unions, some are addressing certain particular issues, individual affiliates of COSATU are still ongoing with their work. COSATU as a federation, I think, has been paralyzed by the infighting that really has stemmed from the period before the ANC conference in Mangaung in 2012.
Yeah.
And that goes back to COSATU COSATU's perhaps politicization of the Labour Federation, which is as a result of its alliance with the ANC. And what we saw particularly is faction that's perceived to be aligned with President Zuma, led by the Kasatu President Sirleaf Matlamini, and a faction that's a little bit more critical of President Zuma and even the ANC's policy trajectory since democracy that has been quite neoliberal and pro-business and pro-capitalist. Yeah. And that faction's aligned as well in Zimavavi. And so, I don't know, we can go back through the last couple of years of these sort of things. but effectively what we know and what's happened is Nomsa Kasatu's biggest affiliate was expelled from the union for certain infringements of what they say is the Kasatu founding principles. And with them, they've taken, I think it's, so there's about seven unions, I think it is, the number seems to differ as to who's in, who's out. But there's about seven unions, Kasatu affiliates of, I think, of 17, who have also suspended their membership and or their activity in boardroom politics and the boardroom meetings at Kasatu's Central Executive Committee, which is the highest decision, well, the ongoing sort of executive body in Kasatu. So what you've seen really is, on the one side, we have Nomsa out of Kasatu, the biggest and strongest and most powerful union in the whole country.
Oh, absolutely.
It's not part of Kasatu anymore. It was booted out. And now they're very critical of Dlamini and his comrades. And with them, they've got other unions now, these seven, in solidarity. And what we're witnessing at the same time is Vavi refusing to go to certain meetings of the Kasatu leadership. And on the sidelines, with Nomsa being highly critical of both the ANC and the Kasatu leadership as it is, there have been reports that they're organizing and meeting other unions and other labor federations, including traditional opponents of the tripartite alliance and of Kasatu, including Solidarity, which is largely seen as sort of a more middle class, I'd say, union representing white workers. Mm. There's the Association of Mine Workers and Construction Union, which we saw established, particularly came to prominence during the Marikana massacre, and that is a staunch opponent of. Sort of Kasatu, but more particularly Kasatu's second biggest or the second biggest union in the country, the National Union of Mine Workers.
Yeah.
And so Nomsa's going around organizing all these other unions in the view of potentially setting up another federation to rival Kasatu. And so what we're seeing is, particularly with Nomsa leaving Kasatu, is a sort of a complete fracturing and even disintegration of labor politics in South Africa that could reform into a new body that is outside of the tripartite alliance and not aligned to the African National Congress. And that would be one of the major, major political changes, I think, and moments in democratic South Africa.
I mean, it sounds like there may be some benefit to a dismantling of the tripartite alliance and maybe there may be some long-term merit in some shaking up of the labor side of things. Greg, you'd be best to tell us. But my worry is that in the short term, when we're having conversations like the state of small business, like the state of business period, the people who should be coming to the party and helping us formulate policy and make sure that business and labor can both coexist productively are too busy infighting. They're too busy trying to figure out who's the biggest federation and who's going to bring the most votes to the party. And I think that's what I'm finding as most concerning for me.
No, I think you're right. So in the long term, there's a lot of people that have said and have said for years that we need our labor movements to be unaligned, they can still be. Most labor movements around the world are political, but often I think one of the problems is that a lot of people say is that Kasatu is so aligned to the ANC and the state, and it's often a breeding ground for ANC MPs, and that the labor movement leaders fail properly to protect their workers and cover worker issues because they're looking at negotiating and collaborating with the state and government, who are their comrades in the tripartite alliance. In the short term, I think you're exactly right. What we're likely to see is a fracturing of workers' movements and workers gain control through unions by being in numbers. And so once these things fracture, often it's worse for the workers. So it could be better in the long term for workers. In the short term, it's hard to say, and it could lead to a weaker voice for your working class.
Absolutely. That's pretty much all we have time for. Thank you so much, Greg. I mean, one just key takeaway that I'm pretty excited about, it sounds like from our little consultation that the Ministry of Small Business Development is not off to a really bad start. It sounds like there's some of the initiatives they're trying to take off with are in the right direction. We just hope they get the execution right.
Let's hope so.
Fantastic. Greg, thanks for coming in, and we'll be back next week. To all you listeners, thanks for making time.
The Daily Maverick Show on cliffcentral.com.